Good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm Paul Ultramon Smith, your host this week, and our guests are Ellis Finger, the recently retired Director of Performing Arts at Williams Center for the Arts at Lafayette College, and the brand new Director of Performing Arts, Hollis Ashby. Welcome both of you to WDIY. Thank you for taking time out this evening for us to talk about the transition of leadership at Williams Center for the Arts. Welcome, Hollis, and welcome to the Lehigh Valley, and welcome Ellis back here. And many of you, of course, know Ellis also on WDIY as our Wednesday morning classical host. Welcome, Ellis, and glad you made it in time here.
I'm glad I made it too. Thank you so much for hosting this very wonderful conversation with me and with our new Lafayette colleague, Hollis.
Our pleasure, and Hollis, welcome. And Hollis comes to us, her background, she's moved here from California, and she was the Associate Director of Performing Arts at Cal Arts based in Berkeley. Did I get that right?
At Cal Performances.
Cal Performances, thank you.
On the campus of UC Berkeley.
Okay, thank you. And we are very glad you are now here with us, Hollis. I'm going to start off the program talking with Ellis, talk a bit about his retirement, which he's now enjoying, and the legacy that he has left, having been the original performing arts director and 31 years in the position. We'll talk about this year's program, both with Ellis and Hollis, and Hollis will tell us about her background and some of her ideas that she has, and we'll take it where it goes. Let's start off with you, Ellis. Tell us a little bit, what drove your decision to retire at this time? And what are your plans during retirement? How are you adapting to retired life? You retired, I think, in what, end of June?
Officially June 30. Okay. Right. So what motivated me to take retirement was a matter of having been quite privileged to be the director of the Williams Center for 31 years, and combination of knowing that I had reached some level of accomplishment. I won't tell my age on air, but it was a good transition age, and I thought it was a perfect time to pass the leadership on to someone new. Lafayette is on the up ramp with a good number of its arts programs, facilities, infrastructure, and academic programs, and community enrichment through the arts, and it just seems like the perfect time to pass the baton on to a capable colleague in the position.
How are you adapting so far to retired life?
It takes some getting used to, I must say.
Yep.
Just going through all the office belongings that had accumulated over 31 years, a lot of things that you forget that you had, and you have to figure out what to save and what to discard, and reconfiguring everything at a home office. It was kind of a very bittersweet march down memory lane, just going through all the files and getting things organized for Hollis. And I can't overstate how blessed I've been with support from Lafayette College and the audiences of the Lehigh Valley. This is really an extraordinary profession to be in, to bring audiences together with great artists and develop a relationship with artists, both Lehigh Valley artists and artists from other parts of the world, to give them the opportunity to make work, to share their work with audiences, and to serve for 31 years, watch the audiences of the Lehigh Valley respond to what we've been able to accomplish at Lafayette. That's hard to turn loose of.
It is, after all that length of time, and particularly, I mean, to most of us, you have been the face of the Williams Center since the beginning, and it's sort of strange to contemplate a performance without you coming out on the stage.
You'll get used to it.
Yeah, of course we will, but of course it feels strange. But looking back over your tenure, there's so many highlights, but from your perspective, are there a couple that you would like to pick out?
And well, we began very modestly, and I remember when I decided to take the chance with the position. I had been at Lafayette on the faculty for 7 years as a member of the foreign languages faculty, and then for 2 years in the administration working in the development office. And when the Williams Center opened in 1983, it was, you know, the cliche is overstated, but I was lucky enough to be the right guy at the right place at the right time. They took a chance on me. I didn't really have qualifications in arts management, but I managed to turn the corner. Good support and confidence in me from my my faculty colleagues and administrative colleagues at Lafayette. And we moved gradually. We built from a very modest all classical music series of six concerts in that first year, opening in September of 1983 with the Guarneri String Quartet, building modestly year by year. And I still think of the 10th anniversary year in 1993-94 as something of a statement to the Lehigh Valley that we were ready to move it forward and to go beyond, if you will, Eurocentric classical music. And in that 10th anniversary year, we deliberately set a very expansive series that included two of the most important contemporary dance companies in New York, Tricia Brown's Dance Company and Urban Bushwomen, two very unlike companies but equally forward-looking and visionary in the dance aesthetic. We made a true statement in our jazz programming. We had no jazz programming at the beginning in 1983. In 1989, we were one of the last presenters of the Modern Jazz Quartet. Faculty was very encouraging of us to add more jazz programming to our work. And in that 10th anniversary season, we opened with Charlie Hayden's Liberation Music Orchestra. And then in February had a group called the Contemporary Piano Quartet that was led by the late James Williams and included the late Mulgrew Miller. And it was just a couple of years after Mulgrew had moved his family to Easton. So that was the beginning of our relationship with Mulgrew Miller, which was quite wonderful and quite rich and quite extraordinary until his death a year ago last June. We remember him fondly, and he brought so much quite wonderful work to the Williams Center. And then in world music, it was our first presentation of the Kronos Quartet, which was very important for us, and also Sweet Honey in the Rock, which was moving into the more traditional arts of African-American a cappella singing with Bernice Johnson Reagan and her colleagues. So that year, 1993-94, was a breakout year for us. It kept moving in positive directions and diverse directions. About 8 or 9 years later, Lafayette was named a hub site for something called the National Dance Project. It put Lafayette and the Williams Center in a commanding position to influence the direction of what new work would be built in dance. We started commissioning work by dance companies, especially Rennie Harris from Philadelphia, Aiko and Koma from New York, and I shouldn't forget the landmark accomplishment of the Williams Center in the time that I was blessed to be there. And it began in 1987 with a long relationship with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. Orpheus Chamber Orchestra is a world-class, internationally regarded chamber orchestra based in New York City. Their work is defined by a quote-unquote conductorless style, an ensemble governance system, as well as an ensemble style of making music and shaping their repertory. They play brilliantly, and they've been coming to Lafayette since November of 1987. Lafayette and the Williams Center is the second most frequently performed site for Orpheus, with something over 85 performances in 28 years. We're second only to Carnegie Hall.
Wow. And you have them back this year, right?
We have them back this year.
Yes. Wow. So you've really covered a really fine spectrum. You brought in the jazz programming. So you've got the jazz. You've got the sound alternatives, which is basically world music / jazz.
Yeah, and this shouldn't be about name dropping as such, but I think we are quite pleased with having hosted most of the major string quartets in American and international music, most of the major pianists and violin recitalists, some of them in connection with Orpheus, some in recitals of their own. And we have become to be regarded as one of the major regional centers for world music, both in the performance traditions from many different cultures, ethnic traditions, and doing so in partnership with such organizations as the World Music Institute in New York. And our jazz programming has been recognized time and again by the National Endowment for the Arts. And as I mentioned, the dance programming, Lafayette was kind of pivotal in the governance of dance awards through the National Dance Project.
Wow, yeah. huge amount, 31 years worth of
memories.
Lots and lots of fine and, events that you brought on.
I should say, great gratitude to all of the audiences throughout the Lehigh Valley and at Lafayette and with generations of Lafayette students. Extraordinary support by the faculty and the administration at Lafayette, and extraordinary support by the public funding agencies that have made much of this possible. We took a kind of a frightful hit about 4 or 5 years ago with the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts. It survived the challenge from certain quarters of Harrisburg's governance, but the investment of the public funding commitments for the arts at the state level with the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, at the national level with the National Endowment for the Arts, and with such regional touring programs as the New England Foundation for the Arts and the Mid-Atlantic Arts Foundation. This couldn't be done at Lafayette or anywhere else in our community or region without this public investment in funding the arts.
Yeah, which is magnificent that you get an opportunity to hear many of the artists, like you've mentioned, in a smaller auditorium, in a more intimate auditorium than you normally would get for those artists with superb acoustics. So, I mean, it's a better listening experience than hearing them in a major auditorium in New York City, at least to my ears. So, yeah, we are very, very grateful. Tell us about you booked the upcoming season's programming. I assume, and at that stage, Hollis wasn't on board, so this is your continuing legacy for the year's programming.
Right. Anytime a transition of this magnitude happens, there is something of a overlapping process. Hollis is already beginning to book the 15-16 season at Lafayette, and that's a 3 to 6 month project just in considering options, conversations with managements and artists, setting budget strategies for funding the year. So this time last year, from September of 2013 through December of 2013, I had made my commitment to Lafayette that I would be stepping down June 30 of 2014. They had begun putting the search process together, some internal discussion of what the next era at the Williams Center should look like, how they would post the vacancy, how would they recruit applicants such as Hollis Ashby to the challenge. And I continued to put everything together for the work that will be heard this year at Lafayette. I did so strategically and artistically. I made sure that in a very, very busy month of September, which was likely going to be a baptism by fire for the new incoming director, that we would have events on Friday nights and not Saturday nights, so we would allow some weekend off, some pacing break, but also in the month of September, as if we began September 5 and continuing basically through October 7, that we have a quite remarkable spectrum of work with a couple of dance performances, two classical music performances, a jazz performance, and a world music performance. And we're about midway through that sequence. We have Ronald K. Brown next Friday as the first of two dance performances, followed by the Paul Taylor Dance Company on October 7. And we have Elizabeth Field, who is the concertmaster of the Bach Choir Orchestra, bringing up two of her colleagues from Washington with something called the Vivaldi Project for a concert on Sunday afternoon, September 21. So by the time we get to October 7, Hollis, who is now fully engaged as the master of the house, if you will have experienced a lot of, she'll have seen a lot of the different audiences and she'll have met a lot of people. She's seen the work that carries that artistic spectrum of performance styles that the Williams Center has become known for. And then she'll be, I think, well fortified to move it forward and to take maybe some traditional genre breaks that we've worked with over time, but possibly to move it into some very different directions and making sure we can pay for it. She can pay for it all.
a key issue, being able to pay for it all. We are coming up on our first break. Hollis, let's go into it listening to one of the performers that will be here in your inaugural season. We're going to play something for a little snippet from Rudresh Mahantapa. Would you like to say a couple of words about that concert? Ellis, would you listen to you folks?
Well, I maybe I should take responsibility for this. We with our jazz programming, we've worked for a long while now with the National Endowment for the Arts, and when we make a presentation in writing to the National Endowment, we do so with kind of themes and structure for the kind of music that we want to bring to the audiences of the Lehigh Valley. We had done a season in 2013-14 themed around the jazz, I called it the Cuban-American DNA of jazz, with so many of the jazz musicians in this country having either been born in Cuba or been strongly influenced by Cuban-born origins. That was basically what we did with Paquito de Rivera, Arturo Ofarril, and Daphnis Prieto, and some others last year. Decided what should we do next, and we decided to put on the theme for the year. So many musicians from other parts of the world are now embracing American jazz, but they're doing so with the spices and the influences of their own culture. So we put it about half of the season together for this year with support from the National Endowment for the Arts. Three prominent jazz musicians who now make their homes and careers in the United States. One was not born in India, but from Indian parentage, Rudresh Mahatmata. One, a trumpet player, extraordinary trumpet player, born in Chicago, but of, I think,
Iraqi
parents,
yep.
Amir El Safir, who did a classical training in jazz trumpet, but did his own Vanderjahr, if you will, just his year of apprentice, by going back to Egypt and learning the ancestral musical patterns of Sumerian music, and especially the religious fundamental essence of what music is all about, and that is now the overlay with the music that he makes as a jazz performer. So those two, Lafayette's never done a double bill, and we decided to put those two musical styles side by side for a concert somewhere in mid-February.
Okay, let's go into the break listening to a little snippet from Rudresh Mahatmata, and we'll come out of the break listening to the trumpeter Amir El Safar.
Program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem's South Side, opening their 2014-2015 season with King Ubu, performed by the Maladype Theater Company of Hungary, an experimental take on Alfred Jarry's satiric classic Ubu Ra, an unusual mixture of pure theater, nonsense, and myth, September 25th through the 28th. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Little flavor of the Iraqi-American trumpet player Amir El Safar, who will be on the double bill with Rudresh Mahatmata's band coming up at the Williams Center for the Arts at Lafayette College. And we are talking here with Ellis Finger, the recently retired director and the brand new director, Hollis Ashby. And welcome back, both of you, to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. Hollis, the date of this concert, February, I think, right?
It is Thursday, February 12th.
Okay, and it should be a gem, and a beautiful, beautiful instrumentalist, both Amir El-Safar on trumpet and Rudish Mantapa on alto sax, and lots of awards. Hollis, welcome to the Lehigh Valley. Welcome to Lafayette College.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having us.
You have high expectations, as you've realized.
Well, you know, people have said to me, you have some big shoes to fill. And my response has been, I'm not even going to try, because Ellis is really one of the titans in our field. And I feel very grateful that Lafayette has chosen me to succeed him. But it's really a tall order.
But you're going to stamp your personality on it, I'm sure. At least the program is all set for the year. It'll give you time to jump well into it. From your perspective, any particular highlights you'd like to mention for the upcoming season?
Well, you know, we always say it's like choosing a favorite child. And my experience and tastes run parallel to Ellis's, so there really are a lot of things. I have to say that the Vivaldi project coming up this Sunday will certainly be a highlight. There's no Vivaldi on the program, however, that's the name of the group. It's Boccherini, Haydn, Cambini, and Mozart. And I think that will be one of the highlights of the fall. Le Violon d'Oie in March also will be a special day. I have to say, I have a particular interest in early music. I try not to let my interests influence the program too much. There would be quite a bit of it, but I will be seeking out other concerts on my own in the area to indulge that interest. And two of really the most interesting performances this fall will be Ronald K. Brown Evidence, which is coming up this Friday, and also in a couple of weeks after that, Paul Taylor Dance Company.
Wow, yes, yeah, both of those, I'm certainly looking forward to. Your own background, you have promoted dance and classical music and jazz. I mean, you've covered pretty much a whole range that's part of the Williams Center program, I think, right?
Well, yes. My education is in theater. I have a graduate degree in theater. But my training covers a lot of different fields, starting with classical music and then modern dance and then theater after that. But professionally, I have worked at the San Francisco Symphony and subsequent to that, American Conservatory Theater, which is the repertory theater company in San Francisco. And finally, Cal Performances. However, starting very early on at the San Francisco Symphony, when I worked in the PR department, we had a lot of responsibility for programming ourselves, many different aspects. And one of the things that really struck me at the start of my career, our department was responsible for programming dance. And the symphony had an annual performance to support the performances of the Joffrey Ballet. And it was during that time that I first saw the reconstruction of Nijinsky's Rite of Spring. And really, that just blew me away. And to hear that performed with the San Francisco Symphony as the pit band was a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Wow. Tell us what induced you to move from California to come to the Williams Center of the Arts at Lafayette College.
Well, you know, it takes a while to find the right fit. And I've, of course, known about this program and the profile that Ellis has created for it. And it seemed like a community that was committed to very high-quality art but was willing to experiment and try new things. I have to say, one of the really appealing things about the Williams Center program is the 400-seat hall, because I've been used to presenting in a 2,000-seat hall, and quite often you're thinking about the bottom line. And there were a lot of things I couldn't do in a 2,000-seat hall. A lot of artists really have created work for a smaller hall and a hall that has really excellent acoustics. So to me, coming to this hall is going to be liberating.
Good, excellent. We are running out of time, unfortunately. I think we have time for a little snippet before we go into the movie review of Bella Fleck we selected as one of the upcoming concerts. And you have Bella Fleck in a combination?
Bella Fleck and the Knights on January 29th.
Okay, let's go out listening to a tiny snippet of Bela Fleck. And Hollis, we will need to have you back in your own right after the transition is over to tell us a little bit more about
Thank
your own
you,
background.
Bill.
But welcome, and we are really glad to have you here in the Lehigh Valley. Let's listen to a little bit of Bela Fleck.
Next up on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, At the Movies, a review of a current film with Paul Willistein of the Press.
Even though the last day of summer is September 22nd, the summer movie box office season officially ended with the Labor Day weekend. While August, typically a month when movies not expected to perform well are released, the month of August 2014 was particularly strong at the box office, led by Guardians of the Galaxy, which duked it out with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. August 2014 had a box office tally of about $1 billion, 10% above August 2013. Summer 2014 was not as impressive. Summer 2014 box office was about $4 billion, down 25% from summer 2013, and the lowest in nearly a decade since 2006. Still, there were some big winners in summer 2014. Here are the top 10 box office hits of summer 2014. Guardians of the Galaxy was number one. Based on Marvel Comics characters, it was the highest grossing with more than $281 million. The second highest grossing movie was Transformers: Age of Extinction at $244 million. Third top grossing movie was Maleficent, a live-action movie based on Sleeping Beauty starring Angelina Jolie as the Evil Queen, which grossed $238 million. Fourth was X-Men: Days of Future Past with a shape-shifting Jennifer Lawrence and $233 million at the box office. Fifth top-grossing movie for 2014 was Dawn of the Planet of the Apes at $205 million. Sixth was The Amazing Spider-Man 2, $202 million. Seventh was Godzilla, $200 million. Eighth was 22 Jump Street, $190 million. The ninth, summer 2014, top grossing movie was How to Train Your Dragon 2 at $174 million. And 10th was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with $166 million. Some movies got it right critically and at the box office, notably director Luc Besson's Lucy starring Scarlett Johansson and The Fault in Our Stars starring Shailene Woodley. Summer 2014 flops included Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, The Expendables 3, Hercules, which starred Bethlehem Area School District product Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and director Seth MacFarlane's A Million Ways to Die in the West, which died at the box office. It starred Allentown's Amanda Seyfried. Summer 2014 surprise indie hits with critics and audiences included director Jon Favreau's Chef and director Richard Linklater's Boyhood. The fall movie season is here, typically the time when Oscar contenders begin to roll out. Opening September 19, The Maze Runner. Memories are erased in the sci-fi thriller starring Dylan O'Brien, Will Poulter, Thomas Brody Sangster, and Kaya Scodelario. This is Where I Leave You. Four grown siblings reunite when their father dies. Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, and Jane Fonda star in the comedy. A Walk Among the Tombstones. Liam Neeson stars in the crime thriller as a private investigator investigating a murder. Hector and the Search for Happiness. Rosamund Pike, Simon Pegg, Stellan Skarsgård, and Toni Collette star in the comedy about a psychiatrist's global search for the secret of happiness. tracks. Mia Wasikowska stars in the drama as a young woman who goes on a 1,700-mile trek across West Australia with four camels and a dog. I'm Paul Woolestein of the Lehigh Valley Press at the movies for WDIY.
Thanks for listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. Up next, take charge of your life right here on 88.1 WDIY.